It's Friday, just before the long weekend. Supposed to be a beautiful one in the Peace Country this weekend. Going over 30 degrees up here with a lot of sunshine. And one of the highlights of the week is we have Justice Minister and Solicitor General for the province of Alberta on the Trending 55 hot seat talking politics and baseball. First off, Minister, thank you for joining us again.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
All right, so first question, we'll jump into the baseball topics, and right off the bat, we see that we know that a few Houston Astro players were going to get plunked, and we saw Joe Kelly nailing Carlos Correa, and I know maybe both of us seen those pictures, or at least how the pitch was thrown, is that it didn't look as direct, but that facial reaction said he certainly felt no sympathy. What are your thoughts on that? And an 8-game suspension, a little harsh.
Oh, I think they got to free Joe Kelly. I mean, Joe Kelly, I don't think he threw at him on purpose. You don't try and hit somebody with an 87-mile-an-hour slider when you can throw 95-plus. I just think that the emotions went high in the game. I mean, I think Joe Kelly doesn't deserve to be suspended at all.
No, fair enough. And then at the end of the day, it's also important to mention, as we were kind of saying before, is that none of the Houston players, they all got a free pass.
Well, this is the thing that kills me. I mean, Joe Kelly gets an 8-game suspension for not really even hitting anybody. And meanwhile, the Astros cheat and win a World Series, and none of them get suspended. So, I mean, I just think this is the first time of many times that Astros players have some sore ribs after a few games.
No doubt about that, and we'll get back into that. This one's definitely not finished. I always like chatting baseball with the minister, but now as you're back in the Calgary elbow riding, obviously this is the spring session that is all said and done, and really you guys, the government, hit the ground running, passing 30-plus bills, and I know there was one that I wanted to highlight that they said that didn't make front page news, and that was one that was put forward by member Getson, who worked at the premier on this, in terms of gravel and how that works. What could you tell us about that?
Well, the biggest thing here is just to make sure we can continue to operate our gravel mines in Alberta. There was a certain court case that came out that had gravel mines being treated a little bit differently, gravel pits being treated differently, and we had to come in here to clarify the law, and we did it quickly. I mean, this thing came up, Getson brought it forward, and you know what? The premier and our cabinet listened right away. Like, we just have an amazing team of MLAs, you know, from people like Dan Williams in your area, Todd Lowland. I mean, these people are bringing forward solid, credible ideas on a regular basis, and it's becoming, you know, the laws of the land.
No doubt about that. And in terms of gravel, what was it like before this Bill 31 was passed?
Well, it's bringing us back to the status quo before this court case came out. So it's really just going to allow us to continue to grow this area of business in Alberta.
All right, and in saying that too, obviously 30-plus bills passed. I don't think we'd probably need an entire day to go through everything. But is there anything specifically to you, and especially from your ministry as well, that you really sit back and you say, "Wow, I'm so glad this passed"? Like, is there a few of them that really stick out?
Well, I think the biggest thing is just getting Albertans back to work. I mean, it was the biggest issue in the last campaign was jobs, economy, pipeline. And with the pandemic, I mean, there's more uncertainty now than ever just as to what the world's going to look like as we get out of this pandemic. And our focus this session primarily was on getting people working again, you know, making sure Alberta is the most competitive place to do business so people want to come, invest, and grow their businesses here. That's the path forward in the future of Alberta, is making sure we're more competitive than anybody else. And this session, we proved that we sat more than anybody else in the country, more than double most places that they passed this legislation.
Fair enough. And I also would see sometimes on your Instagram, when you would give updates at the end of the day, they were usually into the early hours of the morning, sometimes at 1:45, and this week, including one, I think, at 3:35 in the morning.
Yeah, I was up for about 24 hours straight because I came up to Edmonton that morning, and I left at about 4:30 in the morning, and I didn't get to the hotel until about 4 in the morning. So it was a long session. We went around the clock. We actually had a team of people that came in at 3:30 in the morning to relieve us, and they went until about 11 in the morning. So the legislature life, people don't fully appreciate it quite often around the clock as you're trying to pass this legislation and do the work for Albertans.
All right, and I guess in talking about that too is that now that, as you mentioned, much of the government's work has been focused on getting Albertans back to work and making the province more competitive. Now, one thing we did here, and I know it's been a while that I meant to ask this, but about a month ago or so, that there was a Supreme Court ruling in the United States that Keystone XL pipeline was mentioned. Is there anything that you could say about that, and is there any reason that anybody on this side of the border should be concerned with that Supreme Court and U.S. ruling?
So really what it did is it took, they did a mass approval of different river crossings in the states. And what they're basically, this decision puts in place is that we have to go river by river with TC Energy to get the Keystone XL pipeline built. So that's the big, you know, change there. But that being said, you know, the stuff that's on mainland, like the, not crossing rivers, that's all going ahead right now. You know, pipe is in the ground. We're, you know, we've done the border crossing. There's jobs being created right now in Southeast Alberta, Saskatchewan. That pipe's getting built. So we're doing everything we can to get that pipeline to, you know, to give us more market access for Alberta products.
And in saying that too, we've also heard from a U.S. presidential candidate Joe Biden that if elected, he would issue an executive order to, which sounds kind of crazy, to try to rip out that pipeline. And can he do that?
Well, you know, it's one of those things where it would create quite the international incident to actually go and force a company to rip up a pipeline that's actually crossed the Canada-U.S. border. It would be unprecedented in our relationship. I mean, the relationship between Canada and the United States is one of the closest relationships in the world. And to have a U.S. president go in and rip out that pipeline would just be unprecedented. I don't think he's going to do it. I think this is posturing right now for an election campaign. We're going to do everything we can to make sure we position Alberta and this pipeline for the future. We'll work with the federal government. We'll work with all the international bodies that we can to make sure that this pipeline goes ahead.
And also as well, we know that there is a court fight coming up, I think you had mentioned, in the fall with the carbon tax. And this was a huge victory for the province of Alberta earlier this year, just to remind everybody, in terms of the carbon tax was ruled by the Supreme Court of Alberta as unconstitutional. And the message that you got, I guess, from your federal counterpart was, see you in court. Has there been anything on that? Has he show, and also that includes, I think, as you had mentioned in your letter to that, to the federal justice minister, the repayment of taxes that Albertans have already paid into this. Have you heard any response on that, or is he pretty much see in court?
You know what? We asked for every single dime back of this unlawful tax to go right back to Albertans. And what does the federal government do? I mean, the highest court in Alberta said that this is unconstitutional. What does our federal Trudeau government do? They say no. They say, we'll see you in the Supreme Court. We don't want to give you back your money that you rightfully is yours. So we're going to see them at the Supreme Court. And this is the thing that I'd love to. I mean, the left wing, even here in Alberta, the NDP said, oh, why would you bring this court challenge? Everybody else already said it's constitutional. Why would you do this? And resoundingly, the Alberta Court of Appeal found it to be unconstitutional. The strongest decision, I would say, in the country so far on this issue. It's going to be precedent setting. It's supposed to be heard in September of this year at the Supreme Court, which means we should get the written decision by the end of this year. And you know what? It's going to set the constitutional framework for a whole bunch of other disputes, because right now we're also bringing forward a challenge to the No More Pipelines law that the federal government, the Liberals, brought in to make sure that we can build pipelines and develop our resources in Alberta. That is so important. So but this case is the foundation to help build for the other cases as well.
And also other cases as well that you may be challenging the federal government on is that we still see them every week. It seems like every time we chat, Minister, that smaller and different cases are coming up in terms of the Liberal gun ban. Is your office still seeing a growing amount of cases against the federal government on this and kind of saying that, like, wow, this is something we may jump on?
Well, we're still monitoring the firearms firearm litigation that's developing across the country right now. There's so many people that are just frustrated without being heard, and they feel like they're being marginalized. Like, these are law-abiding Albertans that, you know, they are responsible firearms owners. They learned it from their grandparents or their parents. And you know what? They just want to be treated with respect, and they feel like the federal government just has not listened to them at all. So they're bringing forward different cases. We're monitoring that. We're continuing to progress the development of the Chief Firearms Office here in Alberta, taking that away from the federal government to make sure that we have Alberta people, you know, running the firearms office, make sure it's got common sense, Alberta approach to it. So we're doing everything we can to support responsible firearm ownership.
All right. We also have a question here from a high school student named Tanya who says, hi, Minister Schweitzer. I hope to be in government one day as well. I'm very curious. In terms of minister work and MLA work, how would you say your schedule split up between MLA work and ministerial work? Interesting question.
You know, it depends on what's happening in the calendar. So when we're in the legislature, which is, I'd say, about half of the time, that is more ministerial work, because you're bringing forward legislation, you're progressing bills through the legislature, you're doing question period. That would be where your main focus is there. But when you're out of the legislature, the vast majority of your time is spent on MLA work, talking to constituents, bringing forward local issues, helping connect people to the right resources in government. So it's about a 50-50 split.
All right, interesting. Okay, and another one here that came in, and this is somebody who's a metal recycler and says, "Hi, Minister, wondering about the metal scrap rule and how that can affect things going forward." And I know you've talked about that before, but I guess since this is a question, just remind us, because I think you remember what you were telling me is that when you did your rural crime tours, that this was an issue that was brought up quite a bit, and I think you had mentioned in an earlier interview that at first even staff within the ministry was like, "I'm not sure this is really a big issue." So this is something that you really personally took on, I understand.
Yeah, we heard it at the town halls. It was actually in the Peace Country where we heard it the loudest, where people were actually, fearful for their safety going to different sites. The copper wire was being ripped out. We had unsafe work sites, gas wells where, electrical wires are being yanked out, sold for scrap metal, catalytic converters, farm equipment being ripped out. So really we heard loud and clear that these goods were being stolen because they could be monetized easily for cash. And that's where the scrap yards come in. And all we're asking the scrap yard to do is request identification. There's about a $500 database that we're going to give them access to help record information, to make sure that we're responsible in who's selling these goods, to make sure that they're there for a legitimate reason. There's lots of legitimate businesses out there that bring forward scrap metal. That's completely going to continue in Alberta. But we want to make sure that the folks that are out there stealing these goods to monetize them, primarily to buy drugs like meth, which is causing such havoc in our communities, we cut off that supply chain of cash.
All right, awesome. And I guess now that we're kind of getting into the phase, it's obviously now the recess. So, and coming up, I mean, obviously the legislature is another month or so away from resuming again. Too soon, I guess, to say what some of the priorities will be going forward in the fall sitting.
I can already give you a sneak preview on some of the things that will be in our fall sitting. A lot of it's going to be some democratic reform packages, in my ministry at least. There'll be a bunch of focus as well on job creation, red tape reduction. But in my ministry, we're going to be focusing on recall legislation. We're going to be focusing on citizens' initiatives where citizens can bring in their own policy ideas and get them on the ballot. We're looking at democratic reform. We're also looking at some healthcare reform. We had to use for the first time in almost a century some of these pandemic provisions, and a lot of them haven't changed since the Spanish flu back in 1918. So we're looking at that as well to see what changes are needed there, and we've lived it now for the last few months, making sure we have the right legislative framework here in the province.
All right, awesome. Well, that's definitely interesting times coming up in the legislature and obviously as well in the riding. And I guess for those who don't, for those obviously in the piece, a lot of people in this riding talk about agriculture, rural crime, things like that, as I'm sure you're aware. So I'm kind of curious, and what kind of are the big issues that you would say your constituents usually have in the Calgary Elbow riding, just to kind of give people a comparison between the rural ridings around here versus what maybe a city MLA would have to, kind of concerns the city MLA would be addressing?
Well, there's a lot of people in my constituency that work in the oil and gas industry, so making sure that our oil and gas industry has a future, that is really, really important. Jobs. And the other piece, too, is that people want to know that there's a long-term plan for the economy. So making sure that we have other, different diversification efforts, making sure that we have that competitive business environment. Those are the big things we hear. And then as well, I'm sure you're hearing it up there, too, the pandemic response, making sure we have, schools can come back in the fall, making sure that our kids are safe throughout that process, educating people on what the health measures are going to be. That's the big things that I hear in my constituency.
All right, and I guess we'll go back to baseball here, Minister. And you know what? I know we're both excited to see it back. And in saying that, too, now, although unfortunately, we're starting to see some series, even including the Jays this weekend, they're not playing thanks to some COVID responses. And even like the Florida Marlins, it seems like they've been hit with COVID, although I think it's the Marlins. Nobody's really too worried about them. But in saying that, though, do you really think that this pandemic could negatively affect what's left of this season?
Well, I think it's going to be really tough for them to play the full 60 games in 66 days. That'll be really tough, unless they do a whole bunch of doubleheaders towards the end. But you know what? I think they've been doing it responsibly. When they see, some COVID cases pop up on a team, they pause, they make sure that they isolate those that have it. They've done a pretty good job that way, but it's far more difficult to run a league the way baseball is doing versus hockey and basketball. Hockey and basketball, they created bubbles where the teams stay, they don't leave the bubble, they play their games, they go back into the bubble. Whereas baseball, they're traveling all over the country, and there simply just aren't fans, but they're still living their day-to-day lives, so players are still exposed, like everybody else in society, to the pandemic.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And in saying that too, I mean, we've seen that the Toronto Blue Jays have had a had a nice little carousel of options for a home stadium until they settled on the option that they thought of in the first place in Buffalo. So I'm kind of curious about that too, because I mean, when I think of my baseball, it just depended how far the little fences were back in Montreal. Not so much stadiums, but somebody who's maybe played in some college parks before. If you're not able to play at your own ballpark, how much of a disadvantage would that be for a quote unquote home team?
Well, it's a big disadvantage. You don't know, normally you know your own ballpark better than everybody else. You know how the ball bounces off the wall. You know the dimensions, and you know how to kind of just play in your own field. So it's a big issue for Toronto. I mean, they still look like they're a pretty decent young team right now. I'm not sure if you saw that young guy they started, Pearson.
Pearson.
Pretty solid. Like, he was throwing almost 100 miles an hour in his first start. He's looking pretty good. So I like their team. I just hope Vladdy Jr. actually just gets going. I mean, everybody was hyping him up a year and a half ago. He looks so good in the minors. I just hope he gets rolling.
Yeah, they definitely need him to get going. And I will ask this final question on in terms of Pearson. Were you able to throw that hard when you were 22, 23?
No, not even close. That guy is going to be he's a flamethrower. He looks good.
Yeah, flamethrower and some great breaking stuff on that. Minister, always appreciate your time. Enjoy the recess, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
All right, appreciate it.
This is Justice Minister and Solicitor General Doug Schweitzer, politics, baseball, and everything else on the Trending 55 Newsroom's Hot Seat.